The world's best don't get results alone, and now neither do you, no matter when, where, or what you're working on. Introducing Pit Stop's AI Avatar Marketplace. Think of it like Spotify, but for personal and professional growth. Imagine instant access to digital versions of the world's top coaches, each one trained on their unique methods, experience, and coaching style. This isn't just another chatbot. Every Pit Stop AI avatar is powered by real coach insights, their notes, their podcasts, and what they've learned from real sessions. It's a truly personalized coaching companion, so much smarter and more relevant than generic tools like ChatGPT. Whether you want to level up in business, build new habits, manage stress, or boost your confidence, you're not just getting advice, you're getting it directly from the playbook of proven high achievers, all at a fraction of the cost of traditional coaching and available 24/7 whenever you need that extra edge. Ready to find the coach that you need? Use Pit Stop as your launchpad for growth. Head to the link in the show notes and download the app now.
Welcome to Drive to Thrive, a Pit Stop podcast. My name is Sandy and I am your host. And this week I am joined by David Jackson, aka Jacko. Jacko is a former professional rugby player and is now a breathwork coach working with high-performing athletes, but also everyone else as well to help them incorporate breathwork into their daily routine, regulate their nervous system, and generally just live a better life. And that's exactly what we spoke about. We spoke about Jacko's beginning into life as a breathwork coach, actually after his rugby career ended due to a traumatic brain injury, how breathwork helped him in his own recovery and then subsequently set him on a path of helping other people with breathwork as well. We talked about why it's important for performance, but also why it's so important for recovery, why we all need to make it part of our routine, some lessons that he's taken from the best athletes in the game and how they've also incorporate breathwork and the difference it's made to their performance, how much a focus we should be putting on breathwork, talking about the sympathetic versus the parasympathetic nervous system and actually why more high performing athletes were looking to use it for recovery and improving themselves rather than just performance, and why that's just as important when it comes to trying to perform at your best. And then finally, we talked about Jacko's experience in endurance events. He's gearing up to do two marathons in a day soon. And why I love the quote from him, don't rob yourself of the experience and wish it was over. And we discussed why often we have this mindset when we're doing hard things to wish it was over and wish our time away. And Jacko told us why we should spend more time in the moment and enjoying that and the lessons that we can take from that and the mindset and how we can apply that into daily life. This has been one of my favorite episodes I've done so far. I learned so much from Jacko about breathwork, but also just about mindset and how to go into life with a bit more resilience. Please do enjoy our conversation with David Jackson. David Jackson, welcome to the podcast. We just said I shouldn't call you that. I should call you Jacko.
So no, but we'll you went full. No, you can have a middle name if you want as well. pleasure to be here. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, got to be official at the beginning.
Start, yeah, we'll be mates by the end, and it'll be like, oh, Jacko, mate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Let's go straight into breath work. It's such a buzzword at the moment. So many people are kind of, you know, talking about it, practicing it, which I think is a good thing. But yeah, for you, it came as a solution for something really personal, right? After your rugby career ended with a traumatic brain injury. That's a kind of prism for breath work that I've never heard of before. For it being used for something as severe as that. Can you talk me through, I guess, you know, what happened with that injury and then how breathwork actually helped you recover from that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And yeah, there's, as you alluded to, there's many dimensions into which people can use breathing to influence their physiological and psychological states. So for me, initially, it was, you know, I had a brain injury that ended my rugby career back in 2013. And that was a very dark and long and sort of lonely road for recovery that took a fair amount of time. But once I got out the back of it and started getting myself back on my feet and back to some levels of normality, something that was always of a focus and of importance to me and my wife, because you know my brain health was affecting her quality of life as well. My brain health became a very important thing. So we were looking at all sorts of stuff from how gut health would influence like your brain health. And it was within all of that sort of, you know, searching the archives to find out what can we do that is part of a holistic approach to, you know, sort of our philosophies on trying to improve quality of life and recovery and that sort of thing. So, breathing and the effect that brain injuries have on the respiratory centers of your brain that are right smack bang in the middle of that brainstem, that they get disrupted. And I guess a question that I couldn't ask myself was like, oh, there's some research here saying if you had a brain injury, it's, you know, 99% chance that you'd have had some sort of disruption to your breathing and nervous system dysregulation. I was like, well, how do I know if my breathing and my nervous system is okay or not? Like I had no idea. So that just, because I couldn't answer that question, it was like, okay, there's some intrigue there. Not quite a scientific sort of mindset or background from my education. And yeah, trying to, when I haven't got an answer for something that seems quite important, I was hungry to try and understand more. This simple thing of breathing felt like, well, if that is wrong, if that has been disrupted, it's so foundational to just everything that we do because you're always breathing. A little change on one rep, if I can count a breath as like a rep, I've got background as a strength and conditioning coach, so things are like reps and sets. You know, you're doing a lot of reps of breathing. So if it's just a little bit off, the sheer volume of them that you do is going to have, to me, made sense that it could have quite a compounding effect. And that really started it all for me. It came from a point of like, how can I use breathing to regulate that dysregulated nervous system? And how can I help improve blood flow and oxygen supply to the brain? And the way that you breathe is going to affect both those two things.
Was there any kind of specific techniques and, classes or, you know, a specific person you went to in the research you did when learning it, you know, I guess, versus people using breath work just for general, you know, anxiety relief or, you know, box breathing on the train to work because it's really busy and you're feeling a bit stressed or, what was different about what you did for something as severe as your TBI versus kind of daily life breath work essentially?
Yeah. So it wasn't, you know, I'd probably like 3 years post TBI when I started to go down this route. It took a while to get there. But it was Patrick McEwan from the Oxford Vantage was like the shining light, I guess, of like bringing science and breathing together. And the way that he, the way that he taught, the way that he explained, the way that he broke things down very scientifically really sort of spoke to me and my sort of, I guess, personality or learning style. I wanted to know like why it could work and what were some of the mechanisms behind it in order for me to like buy into it and actually try it. I read one of Patrick's books literally called The Oxygen Advantage, and as interviewed him on our podcast back in the day. It blew my mind some of the like really basic science that just wasn't being taught either to you in school or me as a strength and conditioning coach. I'm like, how have I been working with elite athletes, training them, trying to like improve their cardiovascular system training wise, and haven't even considered how they breathe? When I was playing rugby professionally, like, you know, in the hardest fitness sessions, you're blowing out of your ass. And if someone goes, you know, you chop your right arm off to be able to just like breathe a bit better or feel like you can expand your lungs a bit better or something. And it was just something that we'd never, never considered. It never crossed my mind. So there was like all these like things going around in my head going like, this is something that I need to know a bit more about because it feels like a real gem that we've missed.
As opposed to now where it seems to be almost like, I'd love to know if you've had any insight into what rugby training looks like now, but certainly in the conversations I've had with other people in this space, it seems like breath work is now gone from being the last thing people talk about to now it's like almost one of the first ports of call when it comes to things like strength and conditioning. Is that something you've noticed as well?
It's probably a long way from being the first point of call.
Okay, interesting.
And ultimately it probably should it be the first, like, you know, you can get very strong, very fit and breathe terribly. But at some point, it might limit you. And at some point, it's going to affect your like stress response. At some point, it's going to affect like your recovery and your sleep. And you could get more out of yourself with better regulation of your breathing and your nervous system. But the notion of like when I first started doing this in like sort of elite professional sport, yeah, it was a bit left field, and it was a bit like you're having to like work hard to try to convince a few people to give it a go, to like give you the chance to show them like it can help. Whereas now, yeah, as time has gone on and as people have seen and experienced more, and I guess as reputation has grown and having got results with teams or with particular athletes where they speak positively about it, you know, that buy-in from people is a little easier, but there's still lots of skepticism out there from some people, and that's fine. But you know, I often just encourage people like give the basics like a go and see whether it can make some change. If you've never the system that's there to be trained and you've never trained it, but you're training everything else, well, it makes sense to me that if you've never trained it, it's probably not fully optimized yet, and we can do some really good work in it.
Where should people start then? Because I think this is one of the, and I'm like speaking for myself as well, is, you know, I feel like I'm quite involved in this space, I guess, wellness and, you know, doing this podcast and everything we do at Pit Stop and all that. But even for me, sometimes it can almost feel a bit like overwhelming, because there are, you know, you type breathwork into YouTube and you get 8 million different things, or you go on Instagram and type the same thing and you get so many different. And, you know, I'm like, right, well, should I be, you know, just box breathing, or should I be taking like kind of, you know, almost the guided like meditation style classes, or is there something in the middle? Yeah. It can almost be a bit overwhelming. And I'm not going to lie, sometimes I've been like, oh, almost put off by that. And I'm
exactly.
I just won't bother then. Where would you kind of, you know, recommend people to start and try and start incorporating this into their daily routine?
I'm gonna try to give a bit of context to the answer as well before jumping straight
please
into
do.
That. And if I go off somewhere, like bring me back.
No, go, please, but, please, cook.
Yeah, we're at that stage. From the world of sport that I work in, we're at that stage where, yes, it's more popular. You know, I work with some athletes where I just work with them one-on-one and they're part of a team. And then that team does have someone giving some breathing advice. And it's not always like just a breathing. It might be that the physio has a particular interest in it, or the sports psychologist, or there might be someone plugging in. And sometimes there can be some confusion and some misconceptions like you were describing, where there's this whole host of things being at our display, or like a plethora of different exercises breathing wise I can try to use. And we're at that stage where it's still a little bit cloudy, a little bit muggy for some people, in that we're getting a mix. Sometimes I see a mix of like someone giving a high performing athlete that's doing like quite a high intensity exercise, this will help you reset on the field. And they're giving them like a wellness exercise, which isn't going to touch, like that is not going to help you regulate your breathing when you're like really, you know, super high in lactate, you're super high in CO2 and you're blowing out of your ass, and like psychologically all these things going on. That reset that works for, you know, Doris that works in accounts, yeah, it works for her on her computer because she's in a completely different physiological and psychological state. So and that does the breathing a bit of a disservice, because if I give someone an exercise that isn't actually matched up with what they're challenging and their experience, what then tends to happen is like it doesn't really touch the sides, and someone then goes, oh well, I tried the breathing exercise that so-and-so gave me to do, didn't work. And therefore then the misconception that like it just breathing itself doesn't work. So I think for me it's really important that I'm understanding like the physiological and psychological challenges of the client, the athlete that I'm working with, and their sport and their current situation, and trying to match my breathing exercises or my techniques or my philosophies principles that I try to help them to understand, so that they can use what's right for them in the right context of the right day. All the time, people are asking like, okay, just give me like one thing or two things, or what do I do? And it's like, well, the answer is it depends. I know you want a black and white answer, but it depends. It depends on where you're at currently in terms of like your ability to control your breathing, the efficiency of your breathing, your ability to manage your stress response. And then it depends on like the situation that you're in, like how currently physiologically and psychologically stressed are you? How hard are you working if this is an exercise situation? So you've got to then marry and pair those things up. Now, I don't want to make it sound like overly complicated because it actually isn't, but it's just important to have that context. So the athletes need a certain level of understanding. If we're going to pin our hat on like one black or white thing, if we're talking about breathing within exercise, the most important thing, the biggest domino that knocks over everything else, either positively or negatively, is the speed of your breathing. The speed of your breathing, because if you cannot control your breathing and the rate at which you're breathing, you can't mechanically ventilate well. And if you can't mechanically ventilate well, then you're going to be affecting the CO2 that's leaving and the oxygen that's trying to come in. If you can't control your breathing rate and the speed is too high, not only is it going to be like fast and shallow, you've also got the perception that psychologically has on how hard you're working. So breathing rate is more closely linked with perception of effort in studies and research than HRV and heart rate and lactate levels. So you'd think the lactate levels in your blood would be a better indicator of how hard someone's working. You'd think that heart rate would be better. Breathing rate closely matched perception of effort better than heart rate or lactate levels. Therefore, if I can better equip myself to control the speed of my breathing, not only can I mechanically ventilate more efficiently, I can actually change the perception of how hard I'm working. If I feel in control of my breathing, I feel in control of my effort. I feel calmer in the mind. I feel like I could push myself further. Whereas when you don't feel like you're in control of that breathing rate, like you're going to go fast and shallow. Your brain's going to be shouting, screaming, like, stop, stop, stop. The feedback loop to the nervous system is like, we're working too hard. We need to slow down. We need to recover. We need to stop. So that speed of breathing is like the number one thing if you're going to work on anything.
With that speed of breathing as well, how important is it to try to maintain breathing through your nose rather than your mouth as well? Because that's also a bit of a buzzword. You know, you look at Alex Hormozi on a podcast with a nose strip, or people talking about mouth taping and all this stuff. How important is trying to regulate that side of it as well?
Yeah, again, context. It depends on the person. It depends on the size of the airway. And it depends on the sport and what they're doing. If I talk about away from exercise, 100%, you should be breathing through your nose. There's no physiological benefit of breathing through your mouth whilst you're sat doing a podcast or you're sat doing whatever. When you're not doing something or your physical exercise is very, very low, there's no benefit to breathing through your mouth. The only benefit we get to breathing through the mouth is when you need to ventilate a greater volume of air in order to oxygenate sufficiently. And that is a very high percentage of like your VO2 max when you test this in a lab. When I look at like how hard can someone work nasal only compared to mouth, it's much higher than they think they can do. And certainly with a bit of training, it improves massively. So most people can do an awful lot more with their nose than they think they can. And they definitely, by training, improve that. Interestingly, when you do train nasal breathing, the extra resistance that it provides slows the breathing rate down almost naturally. When you're comfortable with that, you can mechanically ventilate better. Nasal breathing allows you to have your tongue at the roof of your mouth, which supports good airway posture. And the tongue is connected to the diaphragm, so it supports that relationship with the diaphragm through the fascia, that when you're mouth breathing, your tongue can't be up, otherwise it's going to block your airway. So there's certain things about the nose that are about the nose that help other things as well. And when you train yourself to be able to do more work with the nose, what it improves is it improves your breathing overall, so that when I have to mouth breathe, I've got better control of my breathing, better activation of my diaphragm, so that I can ventilate more efficiently with my mouth, having trained some nasal breathing. Whereas if you only allow the auto mouth response to drive your breathing, you don't get really any better at mouth breathing in terms of efficiency. You definitely don't get any better at nasal breathing. You'll actually get worse. Your nose will get more and more blocked.
Yeah, because I see so much of this stuff, and I, like, it's actually something I'm trying to do. I'm not a runner. I'm not into it. I know you know, run a lot, and I'm sure you're going to lecture me on why I should. But I do I go for a walk every day, and I kind of swear by it now. And yeah. I'm very blessed living down here in Cornwall. It's, you know, beautiful outside, and I go out a lot and go for a walk and stuff. And every time I hit a hill, I try and do this now, where I like try and nose breathe throughout the whole, like, yeah, ascent of this hill, essentially.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people doing that on, you know, social media, and trying to force themselves into doing it. So I guess what you're saying is that does have a benefit. And it's like, I think someone else said this on one of the podcasts that we did a while ago, is it is like, I think you've just said it as well, it is like doing reps in the gym, isn't it? You know, it is essentially another kind of muscle, for lack of a better term, that you can work out and get bigger. And I think once you start thinking about it like that, I think that encourages you to do it a bit more, essentially.
Yeah, but your diaphragm is definitely a muscle, and that's the one that you're working predominantly. Yeah, that you can build up the strength and endurance, yeah, of. The tongue is also a muscle. That's a really important muscle for your airway. If you look at Professor George Dalham's work, there's a lot of science behind improving, and I've seen it with some of the testing that I do with athletes, where when you breathe through the nose and you have a good relationship with that airway and your diaphragm, you will ventilate more efficiently, meaning you can extract more oxygen per breath from the lungs into the blood compared to shallower, faster breathing. Mm. And shallower, faster breathing can be done through the nose if you make it really, really, if you're forcing it, use the word force, and we have to be careful on that. If you force nasal breathing, you might, one, make yourself feel very uncomfortable. Two, the system then won't relax. And three, you may well actually be under oxygenating, which isn't necessarily beneficial. But if you can build up gradually and not necessarily try and force it too much so that it's not too uncomfortable, you will gradually increase the amount of nasal breathing and the intensity at which you can do it. So walking flat at the moment sounds like it's probably fine for you, but when you go up a hill, depending on how steep the hill is and how long that hill is going to dictate how much that I feel like I can do this sort of, yeah, it's challenging me a bit, but I can still feel composed compared to, like, I'm trying to like force this now. And if I'm trying to force it, I might go into quite stressed breathing mechanics. And yes, you're still using your nose, but what sort of feedback loop are you sending to the brain around how you're mechanically ventilating? You might actually benefit from slowing the pace down, maybe have a little break or slow the pace down, and to allow yourself to like be able to manage breathing through the nose with that intensity and gradually build yourself up. So you need less breaks on that hill or whatever, rather than just trying to force it. I made that mistake big time. It slows down progress if you just try and force it and force it and force it and force it.
Yeah, understood. So actually, as you said at the beginning, like the cadence, if anything, is more important than trying to focus on nose breathing all the time.
I mean, yeah. Well, it would, yeah, so for like something that, like walking, low intensity stuff, like zone two stuff, definitely. You want to be using your nose. And so slowing down the pace so that you can manage it and still actually breathe well, breathe with some depth, breathe with some control of that breathing rate, some of that speed of breathing. Slow it down, or if you need to, have a little break and then go back into it rather than just trying to force it at all costs.
Is that something that you've done? You know, you mentioned just there, you know, working with kind of high performance athletes and things like that. How much time are you spending in kind of zone two stuff with them versus you know, going all out? I assume it's a bit of a mix of both, but you know, where does Breathwork sit in terms of, you know, the work that they're doing now? I guess, imagine when you come in, that's exactly what you're facilitating. But, you know, outside of that, have you noticed that it's something that they're kind of carrying on and really actively trying to work on now?
Yeah, when I work, particularly working one-on-one with athletes, mm-hmm. my role is to help them understand how to integrate the different elements of it into different types of training. So whatever training they're being given to do, they know how to manage their breathing and their nervous system dependent on the intensity and duration of, and purpose of that session. So if it's an aerobic session, they know that nasal breathing and controlling the rate is going to be really good, more beneficial for that, more efficient. They know that if we're trying to create an anaerobic response, that actually we might do some breath holding within some of those like repeated sprints that they're doing, because there's some really nice benefits we get from the increase in hypoxia experience from holding the breath whilst doing that. As well as any time, big one for me is anytime they're like getting challenged with their breathing, and they're having to recover, a great opportunity in conditioning work to like practice the skill of being able to bring that breathing rate back under control and get yourself back to a calmer nasal breath, which is going to be better regulated, better for your mind, better for your nervous system, better for the body. It's more about integration as much as possible, rather than like, okay, now because you're working with a breathing coach, you got to do this session as well. People can't do more stuff. Like if anything, they need more recovery. And so all the recovery pieces or the down regulation stuff that they can do at home on their own, that's where they can get like loads of benefit without adding any additional like training volume or stress to their actual training load already.
I think that's a really good point. And again, this is something that I think is a positive thing that I found, you know, a lot of people within this sphere are now talking about, is the importance of that kind of rest. And yeah, you know, I think down regulation is such a nice way of saying it, because then it doesn't sound like you're being lazy. But like, I think, there seems to be more of a focus being put on that now compared to normal, whether it's, you know, high performing athletes or high performing people in the kind of business world, or even just, I hate to use the word normal, but, you know, people who are living an everyday existence as well. There's a lot of focus, you know, I think it's, you know, the mental health conversation and all this, but how important is breath work, you know, both for you personally and then who you've taught it to kind of work on that a bit more, like just expand on what you said there. And you know, why is it so effective for that kind of down regulation and getting rid of stress? Like I said earlier, whether you're, you know, sat on a busy train, or, you know, waiting for a job interview, or, you know, going to meet someone for a date, or I don't know, there's so many situations where I feel like, you know, you can use this to help you.
Yeah. I mean, certain in our sort of culture and civilization, we're potentially more chronically stressed than ever, but there's an element where we're more aware that we are stressed at the moment. We're starting to understand that like things that we can do that are very simple and free to help me manage my stress is going to be beneficial to me. Like say, whether I'm a high performing athlete or whether I, you know, whatever it is that I do as my day-to-day job. And there's simple things like getting out in nature, you know, grounding, taking your shoes and socks off and walking on some grass, getting in a forest or getting in a body of water, all these things that are really simple to do that's very calming for the nervous system. One of the things that in terms of breathing and down regulation that really comes into play is that HRV is a measurement of like parasympathetic tone, and recovery has become popular with like, you know, the watches and the gadgets that people are wearing. And that's been something that's actually positively good in terms of bringing people's awareness to it. But for some people, they find it stressful to then find out how like unrecovered they are. So it's like a delicate tool to use, mainly because most of the time we've given people a digital device to measure how fatigued and stressed they are. but no tools of how to improve it. So it's like, there's no point in telling me I'm really haven't slept well and I'm stressed and my HRV is down if you're not going to give me the way to help improve it. I used HRV as an example because the HRV stands for heart rate variability. The differences in your heartbeat and the variability or changes in your heartbeats is created by your breathing. So the very fact that breathing creates changes in your heartbeat means that breathing is a tool to be able to control that heartbeat and that nervous system. So simply put on the, it's difficult to say this without sounding like you're singing. So I'm just going to sing it. I've got a microphone, haven't I, in front of me? Every breath you take. So every breath that you take, on the inhale, your heart rate speeds up. It's sympathetic activating. Every exhale you take, heart rate slows down. It's parasympathetic promoting. Those two things are happening with every single breath that we take. One of the simple things is understanding, if I feel like I'm too up regular or too much sympathetic activation, well, you want to spend some more time over around in your exhales. That could be slowing down my exhale or pausing at the end of my exhale. Both those two things are giving you more time in that down regulating, slowing heart rate, parasympathetic promoting side of your breathing cycle. So that's just like a simple principle that I try to get across to everybody that I work with, that we can slow that exhale down or pause at the end of the exhale or every few exhales to help with that very simple like change of physiological state. And that's something that, yeah, depending on the person, I think sometimes I'd have an athlete that's like, you know, there's lots of things that we can work on. And they're like, I want to improve my sleep and I want to work on my like recovery. I don't want to do any of my training is hard enough already. You don't need to make me hold my breath whilst I also do these flipping sprints. Like I'm already off the charts on my sympathetic. Give me all that stuff. And we start there. You know, that's what, you know, when you said at the beginning, like, where do you start with people? Well, one of them is like helping find out what do they need rather than just, oh, I get excited about doing this. You know, that's the mistake I've made before as a coach. It's like, I think you need to do this. And you have to stop yourself and go, actually, the first thing I need to do is ask them, like, do you have an idea of how you want to work with me and how you want to work with your breath? And sometimes it's just that they can be a little bit like, oh, whatever you think I need. But, you know, more as people are becoming more aware of the benefits of different types of breathing sort of techniques and principles, we're getting more people coming with okay, I want to work on X, Y, Z. And ultimately, that's where we probably should start if that's what they want.
Yeah. Ultimately, the vibe I'm getting here is basically everyone just needs to slow down the breathing a little bit. Like to put it in super plain terms, or maybe I'm taking it personally for me.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like everything I need to do. I think I've been like maybe way too focused. And again, maybe it's because I don't know. I'm a bit of a podcast bro, and all the content I get sent as well. And I've got Alex Hormozy with his nose strip on and all this. And I'm like, that's well, what the question I need to be with doing, the nose. By the sense of what you're saying is like actually,
yeah. No, look, the nose strip at rest,
slowing it down and taking a few seconds at the end before the exhale and. Going for that, so yeah, no, I love that. It's all good advice.
Yeah, well, the nose strip at rest, for example, is an interesting one, because if I'm sat doing a podcast, why do I need to make my nose feel wider so I can get more air in?
Yeah,
I don't need any more. I might need some more air if I'm running or training hard, but at rest. I should probably, my personal opinion would be, I would like to just get comfortable with what my nose can provide me. And at rest, yeah. You want to go tongue up, breathe backwards, because that's where the air goes. If you breathe up the nose, this is a classic one for people, breathe up your nose. You immediately hike your upper chest up.
Yeah,
because that is a vertical, exactly, and you go into an extension. That's not calm diaphragmatic breathing. Whereas your air doesn't go up your nose anyway, it goes backwards. It's got to go down your air pipe, your windpipe, down to your lungs. So the airway goes back. When people put their tongue up in the roof of their mouth, as much of the tongue touching the roof of your mouth as possible, and breathe backwards rather than up your nose, you'll feel the air going back towards the back of your throat.
Doing it now, yeah.
Yeah. And then you're going to feel, if I point my camera down here a little bit, you're going to feel like, oh, when
that's
I breathe back,
yeah.
This moves out. Well, that's your welcome. You've just found your diaphragm. There should be expansion out low down when you're breathing, not driving just the rib cage up. So if you combine tongue up, breathe back with quietly, in your sort of day-to-day life, you're breathing calmly. If you're breathing calmly, your nervous system can start to calm itself down.
Yeah, I love that. Switching tack slightly, there's I read a quote that you said that I absolutely loved. It was actually in the context of you talking about endurance events. Okay. But I think it's kind of important for everything. And it was, don't rob yourself of the experience and wish that it was over. And I think that, I don't know, maybe it just rang pretty true with me. Like I'm not an endurance event guy, but like so often, whether it's like, I dabbled in a bit of, you know, I did a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu for a little while. And then, you know, I surf a lot and all these other sports, but even just like, I don't know, just like in general life, sometimes you wonder that, but I know for you, it came through the context of endurance events. And I know you're gearing up for another one at the moment, but where did that mindset come from, and how long did it take you to kind of get to that point of realizing that you've got to kind of sit in the shit and enjoy it rather than just wishing it was over?
And it's one of the things why I love endurance events, not just because of the endurance event. It's like, what, as you've just done there, what do I learn about myself and life that I can apply from the endurance event? What the endurance event like is just a really intense, acute period of time where you're just going to be really challenged physically and mentally. And like, where does your mind go? And how can I apply what I did to get through that? How can I apply that to life? So that not wishing thing, you know, not wishing it away is, you know, partly because you sign up to these things and you might be like 50K into a 100K race and you are wishing you're at the end. And then you're like, but no one's making me do this. Like, I chose to do this. I want to be here and experience it. Why am I wishing this away? A bit like if I'm at work and, you know, you're clock watching and you're ready for the weekend or whatever. We're essentially just wishing our life away rather than like experiencing it. I've always loved like seeing how far you can, or maybe that's the wrong thing. What I've always believed is almost like believed a little bit that I've got a little bit more to give. Mm-hmm. So in rugby, and particularly in like the conditioning work and the fitness and stuff, there was a great fitness coach, and you know, he was very good on the psychology, and you know, he would demand more of you and ask more of you. And I loved going to that place where it was like, you know, I don't feel like I can do any more, but then there's some French guy who's a French guy screaming in your ear, like wanting in French expletives, like wanting more out of you, and asking you, do you want to try and get some more out of yourself? And the answer with me was like, yes, I want to try and go there and experience that. And I think when I finished playing rugby from that traumatic brain injury, and I then didn't really, you know, I wasn't in a place for a long time to be able to like challenge myself. And initially I didn't really want to go back there. And eventually after a few years, I sort of realized that just playing it safe didn't feel like really exploring what I can offer life. So I started then to, managed to get back into running. And, you know, at first, like trying to do a 5K felt impossible. And, you know, it's funny about running, regardless of the distance you go. If I go run 5K, if I go, right, I'm going to go and run 5K. After 3K, and there's about 2K left to go, I'm going like, looking at me, what, going like, oh God, there's 2K left to go. If I go, right, I'm going to go and run 10K. That feeling doesn't happen after 3K like it did in the 5. It happens at around 8 when I've got like 2K left to go. Do you know what I mean? Then if I go and do 20, it's the same thing. When we start to get close to the end, we have this like wishing it was over. As you described in that quote, like it robs us of the experience. And I think that, yeah, it's not like some people hear some of these types of things and think like, why would you choose to sort of make yourself feel uncomfortable? But it's a bit like an ice bath. It's a controlled stress. You're choosing to go into it, overcome it, and you come out the other side of it, like feeling a little bit empowered, feeling like, okay, I've got some control over these stresses that I'm choosing to take on. But does that build up some physiological and psychological resilience for me when life throws at me like a boom, your dad's got cancer, he's only got 3 months to live? Like, does it give me a better resilience to be able to be a better person for, you know, for my mum, my brothers and sisters, you know? That's where it becomes powerful for me personally.
Yeah. Ross Edgley calls it your daily dose of discomfort. You know, it's like you need that thing. And for everyone, that's different. I think what you said there is so great about, whether, you know, running the 5K, the 10K, the 20K is like, what a lot of the time we don't realize it. And because we've got social media and, you know, podcasts like this and all this other stuff, so often we think that if we do want to get that daily dose of discomfort, it does mean that you've got to run a 10K or you've got to go and do 40 minutes of, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, or you've got to go play a 90-minute football game, or you've got, you know, but actually everyone's level of discomfort is completely different.
And it might be therefore the thing on the to-do list that you've been putting off, which was like hang the washing out. I don't know, like just the things that you hate doing, I hate doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. But you just, and like you said, like you feel so much better after, don't you? It sounds so stupid, but like, you know, I've had it before. Literally a couple of days ago, I dragged myself to the gym, like by my knuckles. You know, I was like, oh, come on. And then you get in there and I can't remember what I did first. I think I did like, I don't know, chest press first. And I was like, oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
And then you do that. And then you're like, actually, all right, let's go do a virtual. and then you get 45 minutes in and you're like, I might do a couple of extra sets of this.
Yeah.
You know, and then you leave and you're like, it does not matter what else happens today because I've done the shit bit. I've done the hard bit. Now if I want to sit on my arse and eat peanut M&Ms and watch a movie, I can. Now if I want to go and drink a beer with my friends, if I want to go surfing, anything, it doesn't matter, you know, but because I've done that bit, and then I feel like it unlocks a little. I'd love to know if this happens to you after you've done these kind of huge, you know, on a much larger scale, but it then unlocks you. You almost want to, it like creates another productivity unlock in your brain, doesn't it? So once you've done that, you're like, well, I often feel like I don't want to go and sit and eat the peanut M&Ms on the sofa because I'm like, well, I might as well go and do this because I've already been good. So it creates this.
What else could I do?
Exactly. Yeah. So it kind of does that. And I imagine that's probably the same doing it on a macro level, you know, with these endurance events. I guess I've heard so many people, you know, they sign up for one Ironman and then 3 years go by and they've done like two or three each year. And, you know, you become addicted to it and you want to step it up each time.
Yeah. I think there's two things I want to say about that is one, there's like an element where I feel quite acutely aware of that type of, like, as you use the word, like addicted to it. And like, if it's like if every time you do something, it's like, oh, so, because naturally what sometimes happens is people actually ask at you, they go, what's next? Meaning like,
I hate
the next thing you've got to do has got to be bigger and it's got to be better and it's got to be longer. And that is just leading you down a road. So let me speak only to myself. For me, that leads me down a road of like, still chasing my tail, still chasing something. You're never going to get there. So I'm trying to be quite purposeful about the things that I do and the challenges that I do, knowing that like it's not trying to fill some void that I'm just going to then constantly be chasing after, because it never ends. And I think that there's elements of that, like with having played professional sport and like having to retire from professional sport. And, you know, I had a brain injury, but and sort of, you know, it can be a bit of a boo-hoo sob story. You're going to have to retire from that sport at some point anyway. You know, I was 31. I had a couple more years left in me, but I probably didn't have, you know, I didn't have another 10 years in me. I was going to have to retire and do something else anyway. And understanding that like nothing lasts forever anyway. So when it's like, what's next? Well, I don't have to go and do something harder next time if I don't want to. And then the other thing I wanted to say in that was like, we're in a lucky, very privileged, a lot of it, not everybody, but a lot of us in our current sort of climate of where we live in the world, where we almost get to do whatever we want to a degree in terms of like comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be very comfortable for most of the time. So in order for us to feel some level, like, you don't build any resilience by constantly being comfortable. You know, I don't build any resilience to stress. My ability to cope with challenge and stress do not improve by me just being wrapped up in cotton wool. It's a natural thing for us to want to protect ourselves, because previously, in millennia ago, or however long ago it is, we were constantly, or not constantly, but we would have natural daily like threats to our survival that we would need to protect ourselves, and like we would get challenged and we'd try and overcome them, and that was part of a natural process. Whereas today, in order to, if you want to feel stronger, I don't mean like weight training stronger, like feel stronger, like in yourself, mentally more resilient, we have to do things that are going to challenge us. And when you do things that challenge you, where you're like, I don't know if I can actually do this. Like, I'm doing a 2 marathons a day challenge coming up. Like, I don't, and people are like, yeah, you'll smash it, Jack. I'm like, I actually don't, I've never done that before. I don't know if I can actually do it. And I might not, maybe I can't do it, but I'll go away. I'll learn from the process of like how I've trained for it, find out the ways that I got wrong. And then if I want to, I'll then try and attempt it again. But if I do manage to do it this first time, it's going to change, like you said, that there's a, it changes something in my mind. We're like, there's this thing that I didn't think I could do. I was worried about not being able to do it. And I actually, importantly, trained hard, applied myself, recovered hard, went through a process, trusted a process that I believe is going to help me get there, both physically and psychologically. And it's helped me achieve something I didn't previously think was possible. That's opening up like bandwidth to what I as a person like have capacity to do. And again, importantly for me, not so I can then go and like do a harder running event, which I might do, but it's not, the purpose isn't for that. It's to, can I be better as a person for the people around me in my little part of the world?
Yeah, I love that. Jacko, to wrap up, we've got 6 quick fire questions, all based around the wheel of life. So it's not all about just working on one part of it. So we've got health, mindset, leisure, relationships, career, and finance. So by working on each of those individually, whether it's getting coaching or, you know, utilizing the tools available to us, you know, working on that, it leads to a more fulfilling existence. So first of all, health, what are 3 simple things that you do each day to improve your health?
Take your shoes and socks off and stand on some grass, do some grounding. Breathe quietly through your nose and get some sunlight in your eyes. Or nature to some, just get your scent outside. There'd be 3 absolute simple free things to do. Yeah. Non-negotiables for me. Daily essentials.
I like the grounding. A lot of people think it's odd. I went on
weird is wearing shoes. How long have shoes been around for? It's ridiculous the way we look at our own existence. It's like, sorry. That was a bit of a rant that got me going.
No, not at all. Not at all. I kind of feel the same.
It's laughable. Our shoes. Yeah, you got to wear shoes. Well, we haven't worn shoes for however many gazillion years. It's only a very short period of time we've worn shoes. But don't get me wrong. I wear shoes because you need to when the floor's dangerous or whatever. But like my grass outside and garden, I don't need shoes.
Yeah, I'm barefoot as much as I can be, and much to like my mum hated it when I was younger. She used to get so angry. I grew up in the Highlands of Scotland, and I'd like, you know, go out, take the bins out in barefoot and stuff, and she'd be like, "What are you doing?" But now Birkenstocks are cool now, so you can just wear those and just throw them off and wander around in barefoot, so you can kind of get away with it now.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Is interesting, actually. I'm going on a tangent now. I hope that's okay.
Quick fire questions.
What are your thoughts? I'm
joking. I'm joking.
Shut your watch. I actually had this conversation in a coffee shop the other day. My friends were out for a run, and I met them, and they had a girl I used to know. She's now like a orthopedic doctor, something like that. Anyway, she does loads of stuff with feet and things, and she was talking about how running shoes are actually like not very good for you because they've got this huge like kind of arch like this, and there's actually, you know, There's the argument between like the barefoot feeling and then having these hugely cushioned supported running shoes. And obviously they made the argument of like, look, you know, our feet weren't made to run 20 kilometers in one go and that kind of thing. Like when you're out doing your endurance events, what are your thoughts on this? Because obviously you're quite passionate about, about, you know, barefoot.
So I wear Vivo. I've worn Vivo barefoot for the last
That's what I was going to say. I thought that might be.
Yeah.
I thought that might be what you're wearing. Yeah. Yeah.
So not completely barefoot. You need some protection.
Of course.
And everyone can do whatever they want, clearly, you know, but so if I talk about me, I don't want 2 inches of foam in between me and my nervous system and the floor, because that is not giving you feedback. Yeah, running along and it can, there's lots of things. Basically, people love how to make things easier.
Yeah.
So like, I don't use running poles. Everyone's like, running poles makes it easier. I'm like, yeah, you can just drive it if you want, or get on a bike, or if you want to just make it easier, just don't do it. Yeah, exactly. So, and some of it's a bit tongue in cheek. I'm a bit like, a mate of mine, I like wind him up because he hates it when he keeps telling me running poles are better. And I'm like, mate, I'm a purist. Like, I don't need that help. And I wind him up a bit with it. And it's a bit tongue in cheek, but there's an element to it where like, I want to go and run it and I want to feel the ground underneath me, and I want to feel what this experience is like. I don't, you know, from a, you know, there is an element of if you're not conditioned. One of the things that comes with the barefoot stuff is, right, you cannot hide. And I liked that. I was like, first time I tried to run in Vivos, I was like, holy moly, like, I'm in all sorts of trouble here. Basically, like, my hips aren't stable enough. My calves and Achilles are not strong enough, and I just cannot take, and my running technique is terrible.
Okay.
So I had to address it. So now I run in them and I would love it, but I've had to address my technique. I've had to address my strength deficits, and I've had to provide more stability in the system. So yeah, if I could have run pain free for X amount of time with all this cushioning and support, but all of my weaknesses are just staying unhidden, hidden. And I quite liked, but people don't like that so much, because what that means is you got to go away and do some work and you got to build things up. But guess what? Like, now it's like my calves and Achilles are like flipping rocks, not rock solid, like tight. Yeah. They're like resilient.
Yeah.
Because I've had to.
It's the resilience again.
You can't get away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Some people will, some people won't. There'll be a lot of hocker wearers that'll be like, ooh.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's interesting though. Yeah, that's probably because they realize that they probably shouldn't be wearing them. But I don't know. I'm not a runner. I'm not wading into it. Back to the quick fire. Next up, mindset. Come on, mate. mindset. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone to improve their mental fitness?
Learn how to regulate your nervous system with your breathing.
Of it,
obviously, there's a longer the how bit, but I've got some free courses on my app and stuff that people can. That's the full answer to that is obviously a longer, and this is quick.
Of course, Well, if they've got this far, they probably heard some of how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. If you can regulate your system, you're going to be respond better to stresses. Yeah,
love it. Leisure. What does taking time out just for you look like?
Oh, that's interesting. I felt like you'd sent me these quickfire questions, but I don't remember seeing that one. Yeah, I know you did, but I don't remember seeing them. I felt quite ready.
Blindside,
what do I do for leisure? Yeah. It's difficult because I love what I do as work. Like, work doesn't feel like work. So right. I love coaching. Running, I guess, is technically work, but I love running. I guess one of the things I love more than anything is the beach with my wife. That's what leisure looks like on a sunny day in Sardinia.
Honestly, like I've taken so much from, I think you're like you're episode 38 or 39 of the podcast.
Yeah.
And almost everyone I've interviewed, most people are doing something that they love, which is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, or some aspect of what they love. And often I wonder, is it going to be leisure? It's going to be an activity or a this or a that. And I would say 70 to 80% of them are spending time with my partner or dog or both somewhere nice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if that isn't an advert for what is actually important, I don't know what is.
Exactly.
Because it's remarkable. It's such a simple answer, but yeah, I love it. Every time I hear it, it's powerful. Relationships. What is one piece of advice that you would give to maintain good relationships in life?
It's the same as the other one, but it's to the point. You got to regulate your own nervous system. I've got to regulate myself so that like I can turn up for that person
yeah,
in the best state. And whether that means then I respond differently during arguments, you know, or whether, but yeah, that is, that's my number one thing for sure. It replies to that even more importantly, probably.
Career. What is one thing that you could attribute your career success to?
At the moment, it's my brain injury. Because without my brain injury, I wouldn't have come across breathing. I wouldn't have looked at breathing. I wouldn't be doing what I do. So yeah. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me, the hardest thing I've ever had to overcome. But it changed the direction of my life.
It's remarkable how many people that has happened to. You know, whether it's an injury or a career loss or a relationship breakdown, anything like that, that does lead to a completely new path in life that actually ends up being the one you were meant to be on. It's remarkable. Yep. And then finally, finance. What is the best way to make your money work for you?
I thought this was an interesting question because I'm not necessarily a financial expert. Something that we've done is, the way I look at it is, you've got two options. You either got to earn more money or spend less. And it's potentially easier to spend less. So like something we've done is like our outgoings are super low. Minimize your outgoings. You've immediately got more money without making it. You don't have to make any more money. You've just got more because you're not spending it.
Yeah, it's just finding the balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jacko, I really appreciate this. I think breath work is a murky topic sometimes, and it can be hard to like know where to start and where to get into. And, you know, it's one of those things now that I think increasingly more and more people know it's important, but, you know, and they know that they want to improve at it and bring it into their daily routine. But yeah. Don't know where to start. It sounds like you're a pretty great place to start. Where can people go if they want to find out more about what you get up to?
Yeah, Instagram is a great place. The Breath Running Coach, for sort of your social medias. I mentioned free courses. So probreathwork.com is my website. There's associated with the app, the Pro Breathwork app. There's two free courses on there. One is the foundations of breathing, and then the other is breathing specific for stress and anxiety. So yeah, and our prediction at the start, look, we're mates by the end. You can call me Jacko now.
I called you Jacko now. Yeah, I didn't ask you. David no, Jackson. No, it's good.
Really enjoyed it, mate. It was, yeah, great chatting.
No, it was great to chat to you. I hope all of you at home listening enjoyed it, or wherever you are. Thank you again to Jacko for being here, and we will see all of you for the next one.